Welcome to Deep Roots, a project of Cortez Community Radio. Deep Roots is an examination of environment and traditional knowledge and culture. In this edition, producer Brittany Baxter shows how conflict within a community can bring together some of the most unlikely alliances.
An Indigenous people are those who believe they belong to a place. And non-Indigenous people are those who believe that places belong to them. An honest appraisal says that we non-Indigenous folks have little or no sense of long-term belonging to this land. We are non-Indigenous because we don't belong anywhere yet. Belonging has not soaked into our bones and myths. We still set our course by following the Empire's markers. As a result, we have almost no stories that weave us into the landscape. That piece is by Derek Rasmussen, an educational philosopher who writes about decolonization. The process of decolonization asks all of us to go deep and unpack the ways in which we have been damaged and have done damage with the many weapons of colonialism. How are vastly different cultural ways of knowing and being going to occupy the same space? As I engage with this journey in my own life, I'm always on the lookout for clues and metaphors along the way to provide inspiration and hope. In my 2 years living on this island, I have been devouring stories about logging. For me, these logging histories taken together and arranged chronologically emerge as a metaphor for the same process of decolonization that I'm going through as an individual, and that we seem to be going through collectively as a community. The collection of stories I'm about to share with you now all occurred during the past 150 years. I am enchanted by the possibilities that linger at the end. There seems to be a kind of promise that over time, we can be gradually woven back into the landscape. Bones and myths taking root.
It happened at a meeting between an Indian community in Northwest British Columbia and some government officials. The officials claimed the land for the government. The natives were astonished by the claim. They couldn't understand what these relative newcomers were talking about. Finally, one of the elders put what was bothering them in the form of a question. "If this is your land," he asked, "then where are your stories?" He spoke in English, but then he moved into Gitxsan, the Tsimshian language of his people, and he told a story. All of a sudden, everyone understood. Even though the government foresters didn't know a word of Gitxsan, and neither did some of his Gitxsan companions, what they did understand was more important. How stories give meaning and value to the places we call home. How they bring us close to the world we live in by taking us into a world of words. How they hold us together and at the same time keep us apart. They also understood the importance of the Gitxsan language, especially to those who do not speak it. From If This Is Your Land, Where Are Your Stories? By Ted Chamberlain.
My picture of it is that the logging first started with hand logging, then came oxen, and then came horses. And on Cortes Island, to my knowledge, the first horse logging would start in the 90s. On this part in Whaletown, horse logging was being done on this section particularly from about 97 up until 1902. A hand logger had to be very selective in his grade of timber, because timber at that time, unless it was of high grade, you couldn't sell it. There was no market for it. It was very important that he chose only timber which would justify taking to Vancouver or to the nearest sawmill. I came to this Island at 7 years of age when my father was crippled for several years, rheumatic fever, so that as the oldest child in the family, I was expected to do a good deal of the man's work. And by the time I was through the fourth reader, the opportunity to go to high school was not present because it meant going to Vancouver. But by that time, due to farm work and seeing loggers working in nearby places, I was able to handle saw and axe and hammer and wedge and understood a good deal of the rigging without any special lessons. When I went to the camp and said I wanted a job, he said, "Can you buck wood or can you fall timber or such like?" And I said yes or no. And that was it. So as I say, at 13, I didn't start in as an apprentice in any way. I started 10 hours a day at a man's wages and was expected to do a man's work. And I was able to do it. The first job I had in the woods was bucking wood for a donkey. Later, by the time I was 16, I had done almost any job in the camp with the exception of cooking. For a good, ordinary logger with $3 for 10 hours work. $3 a day for 10 hours work, and you paid a dollar a day for your meal, for your meals, and what accommodation there was in the bunkhouse. So it was $6 a week for board and lodging, $3 a day for a 10-hour day. And that was a fair wage.
December 21st, 1997. On this beautiful winter solstice afternoon, a friend and I canoed from my home on Cortez over to Twin Islands to visit the caretakers and observe the recent logging. Since November 28th, six fallers have worked 8 days and clear-cut an area approximately 3 hectares. The new owners had said they only planned to take a few cedars. However, all trees in this area, cedar and fir, have been cut. The word from the caretakers is that the new owners will be bringing heavy machinery to the island January 1st and plan to continue cutting for the next 8 months. Essentially, they plan to clear-cut the islands and develop them. Land that has been protected by a single private owner for decades is now suddenly being exploited to the max. I have been in touch with David Hutchcroft of the Department of Archaeology in Victoria, who says their maps show 3 shell middens located where the 2 islands meet. We will write a letter to Jenks and Twin Islands Estates to inform him that these middens must be protected. We are seeking bird experts to locate and protect nesting sites. All of this will not stop the logging and underscores the need for some kind of regulation of logging on large parcels of private land. Michael Jenks is known as an aggressive logger. The issue of large private forest landowners having the power to measurably damage forest land and cause potentially serious environmental problems is one facing all of BC. From Martha Abelson.
January 22, 1998. Magdalene and Paul Nepurges, caretakers on Twin Islands for 10 years, left Saturday because of the logging that is taking place there. "We're leaving for good," Magdalene said on Saturday morning when they arrived at Lund by boat. "They are going to log the whole island." Magdalene said they should have been protected as a park or a reserve. "It's such a beautiful place, such a unique place," said Magdalene. Sliaman Treaty Society Research Coordinator Maynard Harry said Twin Islands is in Sliaman's traditional use territory. There are three recorded midden sites, and a culturally modified tree inventory has been done. All have been damaged by past activity. Harry said Sliaman is currently preparing a report to send to Jenks about the concerns it has with the islands. Sliaman Treaty Society negotiator Norm Gallagher confirmed Sliaman's concerns. It's a high traditional use area. It's in our traditional territory, and we do have concerns about the area. Magdalene said that when the lodge was being renovated in 1974, two skeletons were found in the basement. One was of a 20 to 30 year old Native woman that was 300 to 500 years old. The other skeleton consisted of a few bones that were unidentifiable. Laura Waltz, reporting for the Powell River Peak.
February 22, 1998. Environmentalists have opened a new war in the woods. The main target is former Prince George logger Mike Jenks, who's logging some of the most high-profile real estate on the coast, including an island used by the Queen and Prince Philip as a retreat on visits to Canada. Twin Islands, actually two islands joined by a man-made causeway, is 270 hectares at the north end of the Georgia Strait. The property was bought in the 1950s by Maximilian von Baden, a descendant of Austrian royalty. Von Baden began selective logging before Jenks offered him $4 million for the island. Many of the 1,000 residents of nearby Cortez Island are stunned by the speed at which Jenks began logging. They had no idea that the island had been sold until the deal was done. About 60 people from neighboring islands put up a floating blockade to stop the loggers from landing on the island on the first day. And they've picketed the first barges full of logs leaving the island with a small flotilla of slogan-festooned boats. But Jenks wasn't deterred. "I've been buying property and logging it for years," Jenks said. "I find property with enough timber to make it worthwhile. I buy it, log it, and develop the land. That's what I do. They're not going to stop me." Jenks says the environmentalists created the opportunities he's exploiting on the islands with their demands and protests. "They tormented the big logging companies with protests and blockades until they got out." And he wants to explain that what he is doing is not clear-cutting. "I don't have to leave these trees," he said, pointing out small stands of young cedar and fir his loggers have left and are working around. "I'm leaving these trees because it looks good. You'll be able to build a house here. Maybe have a horse." He hopes that when his logging on this island is finished, he can sell the lots to people looking for retirement or vacation homes. And he hopes to sell the lodge to someone who will run it as a motivational center for business leaders. Greg Middleton, reporting for the province.
Monday, April 20th, 1998. Dear Swan, yes, essentially, the rumors are true. All falling has stopped on Twin as of 3 weeks ago. They are removing by barge the fallen logs and cleaning up, burning, and hydroseeding. The word is that there are two very interested buyers. We think they stopped cutting because of these buyers. We should see some movement in the next 2 to 3 weeks regarding the sale. Martha.
Twin Islands has been passed on to an unknown buyer as of early July 1998, for probably more than twice what Jenks bought the islands for in 1997. While he was the steward of these beautiful islands, approximately 40,000 cubic meters of almost mature red cedar and Douglas fir were barged from the South Island using patch and selection track skid systems. Some riparian and creek habitat was degraded, interior forest habitat and late seral structure was radically reduced. Gravelly soils and bedrock were exposed by the ground-based equipment over approximately 30% of the areas logged. Some cleanup and slash burning occurred before the sale went through, reducing available coarse woody structure for near-future biodiversity on the island. Since the plans of the new owner are at present unknown, all is peaceful around Twin Islands this summer.
Let it grow, let it grow. Weather outside company's so delightful. Island Timberland, won't you grow? Let it grow, let it grow, let it grow.
You are listening to Deep Roots on CKTZ Cortez Community Radio, an examination of environment and traditional knowledge and culture.
I'm Kevin Peasy. I'm from the Clahoose First Nation. I've been living on the island here in the reserve for the last 10 years, I believe. Run a sawmill also at the Clahoose, and I'm also one of the directors for the forestry for the island partnership. Part of the reason why I moved here, because I was adopted when I was a young one. I think I was about 4 months old, or maybe even younger. And when I was 10 years old, I was told that my mother was Jessie Louie and maybe lived on Cortez or Paul River. When I reached the age of, I think it was 36 or 37, I decided to make my way this way and meet my mom.
My dad, Wayne, he was looking for a place to go in the summer. At that time, he's friends with Peggy Kayla, who was involved in putting Hollyhock together. She actually talked him into buying the place next to Hollyhock, and she found out he had a daughter that he didn't know, wasn't connected with, and she said she'd help him get to know his little girl. So meanwhile, I'm in Wales, and the next thing I know, he came to visit that winter. It was in 83, and then the next summer I came to get to know my dad and spend time here, which was really amazing for an eight-year-old to come and have summer experiences here. So I came every summer after that. Once I was an adult, I spent as much time as I could here.
I'm a very eco person for logging, and I do not believe in clear cuts. And one of my grandfathers that came from Russia, I believe in the 30s, made it here on Cortez and made it out to, what was that?
T-Kern.
Yes, and he was one of the hand loggers there in the 30s. And then my father worked in logging camps, so it's been running through the family. I want to keep it going. I was asked by Kathy Francis to take over somebody's spot that resigned as a director, and it didn't take me too much to think about it, and I joined. Started learning actually what was going on here with the forestry and how long they've been fighting for the license and everything. I think it's been 24 or 25 years.
I think I've been interested in forestry issues for a long time, and I didn't go to Clayquot Sound, but I had friends actually from here that did in the early 90s, and so that kind of turned me on to there's an issue with logging and how it's being done here in BC. Some of the influential people for me on Cortez were involved in this vision for a community forest. Like Kevin said, going back 20 plus years. And in particular, I would say Liz Richardson from Lanier Farm was a big influence for me, because she, you know, had a passion and knowledge and was very involved, and so I sort of was tracking it actually quite a lot through her. She was a mentor and friend, still is. But now I think Kathy and Liz are really key. I mean, I feel like they're key in my life for a few different reasons, and a powerful one is, you know, that led us to meet, really. You know, their friendship, their work, their vision is part of our story. So I was making an effort to be here for the community planning meetings, that happened that was a long process of consulting the community and our values and our sort of vision of what kind of community forestry operations would happen and what that would look like here. So I was making sure to be here for that process. And that's when Kevin and I actually met.
We had a meeting at Linnean, and Kathy and I carpooled to get there. I think we just got there, and you pulled in just right after us. And Kathy says, "Oh, you made it, Georgina." And I was like, "Oh, who's this Georgina? I've never met her."
So I came up to you to say hi to Kathy, and she introduced me to you. I really don't know where this came from. Like, it still kind of shocks me. But I just, like, blurted out. I sort of looked at Kevin and was like, "Yeah, I'm waiting for Kathy to find me a husband." And then she said, which is a little shocking, "Oh, well, Kevin's single." And then amazingly, you and Kathy afterwards came in back into the small groups and came and joined the group I was part of, which was marketing for the forest. And then when the group discussion was over, you were like, "So how long are you around?"
Oh, I was flirting then.
Not too long prior, I was like standing on the beach at my dad's house and remember just kind of like I was having all these texts with these different online dating people, but I was like, there's gotta be somebody here. Like someone who already loves this place as home. And Kathy had some insight into my love life, so she knew that. So I don't know if that was part of her impulse to volunteer Kevin. I'd had a dream about Kevin. This was a really strong dream, and I was like, okay, I've got to go figure out who this person is. I was like, wow, am I going to go knock on his door? So instead I texted him, "I'd love to talk to you, and not just about forestry." And then he said, "Well, come for coffee."
Interesting.
In the morning.
I was like, okay, is she being nosy in what's going on? Or is she being nosy about what I know about the forestry? Or is she actually have a crush on me? So it took me a while to figure out. I had been dating some people on Vancouver Island, but nothing serious. And I just know it's hard to get somebody to move here on Cortez because it's so remote. And I've had a hard time adjusting living here. It took me about 8 months before I said, wow, this is a beautiful place and I can do without the stores and big box stores. And then I just thought it was time to find somebody permanent. And Georgina appeared.
At your door.
At my door. It was perfect timing.
We like went to play frisbee golf and already started picking out some baby names. And I thought, hey, this guy is just as crazy as me. This is good.
I wanted to find the right person. And so when you mentioned that you wanted a kid, I was like, oh my God, this might work out.
We started falling in love. And, like, there was just a feeling like, yeah, this could work for both of us, who we are and how, like, we make a really good team and it's really easy to be together and, like, do life together.
What I seen getting the island people and Clues people together was the multi-purpose building. And, there was starting to be more events happening because of the size of the hall. I had the opportunity to work at the building on the inside, and we were milling the wood for the trim and for the ceiling, and that wood all came from the Toba Valley too. A buddy and I were in there for I think about a month and a half. I said to him, I said, you know, it would be great if I could be the first one from Cahoos to be married in this building. And he sort of just laughed, and I laughed. And it happened. I have a big family, and Georgina has a huge family. And I thought it was great because I had family come from all over, from Vancouver Island and Down Island. And something that happened special for me is knowing that my dad made it to my wedding, and him and my mom haven't seen each other in 38 years or something. So that brought them together for the one day to see their son get married. And it was great that Georgina's family came from all over through the States and Wales. So there was people from all over basically the world that showed up to the wedding. And I could remember looking up at the ceiling and saying, wow, that dream came true. And yeah, it was a lot of laughter and fun, and it was a bit of a traditional wedding, and we had some people come over from Slam and to do the drumming. And
yeah, so the Blaney family came from Slam, and they really brought a lot of the traditional culture and drumming and singing and some storytelling, and also we did a brushing. In the beginning, before we went to the hall, we met down at the closed dock and used the cedar to sort of brush to cleanse ourselves and let go of the past and be ready to step into something new. And our rings were brushed with the cedar, and my Welsh dad came and sang a really classic Welsh love song. And Kevin's auntie Helen said a prayer in her language, and Kathy welcomed me to the Cahoos community, which was really special. And I just remember looking around, and it was beautiful to have so many people coming together who'd never really been in the same space together, and just to look and see, oh yeah, by coming together we do bring these different people together. I'm kind of a gypsy. I've always moved around. Kevin's so settled here and core to the community here at this time that I think we just figured out he would be the anchor and I would come and go, continue to come and go, but to come home to Kevin. There's just a basic respect, and we've always had that and maintained that. So with that foundation, you know, respect and kindness, we can pretty much deal with anything that comes up, at least so far.
Oh.
Thanks to writer-producer Brittany Baxter for this edition of Deep Roots. Our recording engineer is Sean Cowell. Technical help from Rob Selmanovic. Deep Roots' senior producer is Greg Osoba. Cortez Community Radio is grateful to the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Victoria Foundation, other donors, and the Clahoose First Nation for their support. More information can be found at cortezradio.ca.